amazing. It's a great application. I know during the holidays, I had a Thanksgiving dinner. My sister returned all of the Rosetta Stone programs because she was introduced to this. So I think it's great to have this available for free. And you mentioned all you need is a library card, right?
Yeah.
So anyone
can. From the library homepage, you have to enter your library card. If you were not in the library,
to get a PIN number also.
Yeah.
Great.
And pretty much the same, just for kids?
No. It's way better. I think it's good for adults. It's really fun. It's kind of like Teletubbies.
Looks like it's got a cache. I think we're going to need to move on, so maybe we can do Little Kim another.
Could we do it? Maybe at a future board meeting you could bring back and we can see Little Pim, but I think the mango application is wonderful. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Go back and do it with us.
Yeah.
Janice?
Library. local history website. So I just wanted to show you a couple of things at the actual event. So some people came with their albums, and she did. And you can see how proud she is. She came with a whole album full of photos. So what we did for people with albums, they consulted with somebody from Researchers Anonymous, which is a group of local historians, and they sat down with the people with albums, and they looked through them, and they helped them decide, well, which are the really interesting pictures maybe that they hadn't seen before, which were the most significant ones, because we can scan about 10 to 15 images from any one person at any one time. And so we had some people come with albums, and then here's some characters. Came with little packets of photographs. This is from David's mother's family.
That's in Capitola.
One of the photographs. You can see it closer, actually. And there's lawn boards. Somebody's grandpa with his lawn boards. Grandpa then. Now, this I have heard, because this is typical of the face of people when they were showing us their photographs. They were so proud. They were so proud. You can see some people came with individuals, one or two photographs. They loved the idea that they were contributing to the library, and they loved the idea that who they met was a team of public library people, UCSC library people, and museum people, and historians. They loved that everybody was together. And her face is very typical. Everybody was. Some people came with photographs, all manner of things. The person in black on the right there is one of the UCSC team. So she sat down and they figured out what things they were going to scan. And then what she's doing is filling out a form with all the subject areas and the details, so we know the details of the photographs that we're going to have. Things like this, battery crew. We have the family that owned the battery company down on Front Street, which is no longer there. Here is I am asking all of you and all of you is for help, because I want to start scheduling the other regions in the county for a snapshot story session. So I'd like advice from you, from your particular areas. Where is a good place to be? What is a good time? Maybe you have an event coming up where snapshot stories would fit in. Who are some local historians or people in the know who would be good to be there? We will have some Researchers Anonymous folks there, but if there are other people in your region that would enjoy helping us identify these things the way that I described, please let me know. I'll be contacting each one of you individually, but if you have ideas for me, I am really interested. I would like to start scheduling these things actually this month for 2014. It takes us about 6 weeks in the background to take care of all the cataloging and everything before we do the next one. So I'd like to do them in at least 6 week spans, but if I can't, then I can't. So, and each site, these happen to be live oak photographs, even Huey Newton. But we will, each postcard for each region will have photographs from that region. So let me know.
Thank you so much, Janice, for all your work on this. I mean, it was a great partnership.
David was there almost the whole time.
It's a great partnership with UCSC, Museum of Art and History, and the library, taking the leadership in terms of our community program. So thank you so much for reaching out. One thing that was interesting, we had someone come down from Pescadero, and I had no idea that the library branch that was built in Pescadero was part of the original Santa Cruz County Library System.
Really?
At one time, it was part of this system, and then apparently because it took too long from someone to drive down from that area here to go to a board meeting, it was divided, so that then became part of.
Well, actually, what he told me was that there wasn't actually a direct road; you had to go on the beach.
Yeah, to go. Yeah, he told us you had to drive on the beach to get there.
Those were the days.
And I just thought that was, you know, very interesting, and the people there were very enthusiastic, not only about their family stories, but all the images they contributed to our historical database, where we have all the photos listed for you to look at. It's also one of the most popular sites on our website, and it's included in the statistics for tonight. So thank you. Okay, and from recognizing Janice, we'll move on now to more staff recognition. So, Teresa?
Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think any of these people are here today, but we thank you, thank all of them for their good work.
Okay, please pass along our thanks. And then if you can move on then to the member reports, any member reports, the sub-finance committee?
Just a quick note, we didn't meet last month. We got our meeting scheduled every other month at this point because things are working so well. I did want to request, I forgot to mention Teresa, that the website does not have the current budget on it. It's got last year's budget.
I noticed that today too.
So if we can get that updated.
All right. So moving on from member reports to the consent agenda. The consent agenda is approved as one item. So if there's any member of the public that wishes to speak to one of the consent agenda item or request to be pulled for further discussion, now's the opportunity.
Just a comment on one of them, on the minutes. Considerable amount of oral communication on last month's meeting regarding bringing up the branch's open hours, and it was stated that we were going to see that in February. I'd like to see the oral communications at least noted as a sentence on what was brought up, just as a reminder.
Okay, to include that in there. We'll make sure that's included in the final minutes. Okay, any member of the public would like to have an item pulled for discussion, or board member?
Move consent.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Termini, second by Councilmember Reed. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously. And is there a Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Libraries report?
Yes. Hi.
Welcome.
I'm Kate Canos. I'm hopeful that you all received a wonderful fundraising brochure in the mail, the Solstice Gala, Stay Home and Read a Good Book. You can have it. If you check the Friends website, you'll see what Lori King is reading. We have, I, there, all supposed to have our pictures taken with what we're reading on this day. What you're supposed to do is relax at home with a good book and just send us money. We got this idea from the Los Angeles Public Library, and we've already raised about $5,000 in just the 2 weeks this has been circulating. But I'd have to find a more impressive book if I'm going to have my picture taken. I don't want to do it with one of my traditional mysteries. We are having our holiday sale on the 7th, following, we'd like to follow the City of Santa Cruz's parade, because we get a lot of families and children. So we'll sell books for people to give as gifts, we'll gift wrap them, and we'll give out cookies. The Scotts Valley branch is having their sale the same day, but you really want to come to the downtown branch. And don't tell Ellen Campos I said that.
Well, then come here afterwards.
Come to both. Or come at least come to one, because they're both a lot of fun. And last year downtown we raised almost $1,000 in one day. So the big sale raised $13,000. So we're hopeful that we are going to continue to do as much as we can to raise money for the library and to support its programs. I'm hopeful that everybody will get on our website and tell what you're reading at home for the gala. It's a really a fun event, and some of the quotes are really quite hilarious. Everyone will not be there. You must not go. Who do you want to sit next to? It's really kind of a cute idea, and we thank Los Angeles for letting us borrow it from them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, the next item on our agenda is the interviews for the citizen board member position. Is it Teresa?
We received 5 applications. Apparently one person withdrew this evening, so I had 4. And what I told everybody ahead of time is they had up to 5 minutes to make a presentation to the board about themselves, and then you'd be free to ask any questions. We're just following a process that was set up a few years ago when Barbara Gorson left the board. And then the vote will be taken at the January meeting, and the exact process for that is still being worked out, because we have more candidates than we're used to having. So that's what we're doing. So the first up would be Marjorie Coletta.
And I'll just say also that all of the application materials were included in our agenda packet, so we already have that background reference. You can speak up to 5 minutes or prioritize certain things, but we just to give everyone some background that we have all read your application materials and have that background already. So if there's anything else you'd like to add to the discussion, please step forward.
And I will let you know that Lisa Dillis had received her resume today and asked that she, so that was in each of your places. So is Marcus right here? I don't see anybody. I don't know her.
We'll start with Marjorie Coletta.
But she doesn't seem to be here.
No? And then the next, Lisa Dillis.
Ready to go second. So I can sit here, would that be okay?
Please. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very interested in becoming a citizen member of the Library Joint Powers Board, and one reason is I was sort of partially raised in libraries, since my mother felt that there was no problem that couldn't be solved with a library card. And as a longtime teacher in Santa Cruz County, the importance of literacy and of information being accessible to all has always been a huge, important goal to me. So my strengths as a candidate, I think, include my aforementioned dedication to libraries, and I'm sure all of us could go on and on about how much we love our libraries, and my experience with many Santa Cruz County libraries, and my ongoing involvement with schools and diverse communities. And I want to mention I lived for about 20 years in Santa Cruz and used the libraries there. I've been in Scotts Valley for 20 years, and I use Scotts Valley and Felton. My brother lives in Mount Hermon. And then living and teaching in over 25 years in Live Oak, I'm very familiar with the community there and the excitement that when we had our when our new library opened down in the old Albatross nightclub. So I really feel I have a pretty broad experience with lots of our libraries. And as a parent and as a teacher, I also kind of know which libraries have what that I'm looking for. For example, I love to read in Spanish. Downtown has got an awesome collection of Spanish literature and novels. So that's where I go. But if I'm looking for folklore, I might come to Scotts Valley. So it's fun that not every library has the same selection, and as such, it just makes the entire collection richer for everybody. I want to say that I know many of the libraries, and I value them all. So they together make a wonderful quilt of resources for our community. If you've had a chance to look over my resume, you'll see that I've been a teacher and administrator in Live Oak for 25 years, and I've worked extensively as a bilingual classroom teacher and as a director of programs for English learners. And I was director of the migrant ed program in that area, so I'm very familiar with many of the families, the organizations, and other community community resources that population accesses. Además, yo puedo hablar español con cualquier persona. So that's always a lot of fun. I know that when this Live Oak Library opened, it was just like people were so dazzled, kids were so excited. This a fabulous field trip from Del Mar, they can walk there. But from the other schools on 17th, you can do a pretty quick little field trip, and they're always so welcoming, and kids are always amazed that the library cards are free. So I've seen how the Live Oak Library offers also stories, books, a meeting place, and access to technology for our students who may or may not have a rich array of devices in their own homes. So I certainly see the value of the public library augmenting what our small school libraries have. And we are, in school libraries, we often are addressing a lot of the things that we're looking at in our public libraries for young people who are coming of age in a time that is quite different than when many of us came of age, and the digital resources that they have come to expect and that sort of thing. And lastly, my experience in school administration has familiarized me with many of the tasks and projects that are similar to those that you face, that libraries face. Relationships with the public, outreach, working with staff, dealing with facilities and construction. We're just in the process of opening two new classrooms, which are green factory-built buildings. And of course, some things have gone very well and some things have been glitches, but so what if it's 3 months later than we expected? It's going to be awesome when they open in January. I feel that it's imperative that we keep our libraries as accessible and up-to-date and vibrant as we can. And I think that's important for all of our communities, certainly for our children that are coming of age. And I'd like to have the opportunity to work with you to make that possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for considering my application.
Are there any board member questions? Thank you very much.
You don't want me to sing or something?
Yes, please.
And you remember the albatross, which speaks to your misspent youth. I noted that.
James Mosher.
Hi. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to present to you all. And I'm also passionate about libraries. I grew up in libraries, and I see it as an absolutely vital part of each of our communities. It's a place to bring people together, and I started my career as a community organizer, and as an organizer, I saw the value of having this kind of institution as a core part of communities. So I'm very passionate about it. I've been very active in particularly the Felton Friends of Libraries. Being involved in a lot of the events in Felton. And I think I know the Valley very well, and I think I bring some special skills that the board may need in the coming year, especially if you're going to do a bond measure. I was active in Felton FLO. We passed a bond, a $10 million bond, with 76% yes votes in Felton to join the San Lorenzo Valley Water District, and also worked on a number of political campaigns in my capacity of my professional life is in alcohol and drug prevention, particularly with young people. And I've done a lot of work in communities working on a variety of public health and social justice issues. I'm really hopeful that we can have the bond pass. I think the finances for the library are the most important item on the agenda to build the facilities moving into the 21st century. I think I know the Valley very well and could be very helpful in helping to manage a campaign if we do go forward with the bond measure. Having said that, I also want to say that I see, if I am on the board, my role is not representing just the San Lorenzo Valley. I see the system as we all are going to be dependent. We are all dependent on each other to make this campaign work, to make the system work. I believe my skills as an organizer and as a political activist will come into play for this, because I really work to build collaboration, to work across diverse groups. I've worked a lot with many different groups in my capacity, my professional capacity. So I also have a lot of management experience, fundraising experience. I've not been a professional in the library system, but I really respect it. I'm looking forward to learning more about how libraries run, and I hope that my skills can be helpful if I'm chosen.
Thank you. Are there any questions from board members? Thank you, Mr. Mosher. Is Fred Reese here? Hi, Fred.
Hi. I have a library card. I have 6 items on hold and no fines, just so you know. I've always had a passion for libraries as a kid, since my dad took me in when I was age 6 years old. But outside of ontology nurses, I think librarians are the greatest people in the world, period. You know, and what I think of a library, I see it more as a place that reflects the community in great depth. You show me a successful community, I'll show you a great library. I remember being in Hialeah, Florida, and the best book they had was a biography of Bela Lugosi, and the rest was just thrillers. But when you go to a town or a city that has bright people, successful people, but people who are involved in organizations, you will always see a successful and vibrant library. And some of the needs I see, I mean, my background, let's see, I was a journalist for about 8 years. I've been in radio locally here at KSCO, served Pleasure Point, been around Scotts Valley, been out here about 25 years. I've written some books, won a Penn Award. Library actually has a couple of my books. I'm lucky to have that in here. But I like the community. I've always enjoyed here. Hit some balls at Valley Gardens, lost some balls at Valley Gardens. But what I've seen is, like, I think that, you know, I always go to libraries a couple times a week, matter of fact. I like the librarians here. I think they do a great job. But I do think that there are some needs that could be met. I think that, my understanding is that there really isn't a full-time child librarian, you know. And when you talk about developing the future, you have to develop future readers. So I think that's one need that a librarian should have, especially in this area. You look at the kids, and you see the women come in, they, you know, stacking up those books. They have 6 or 8 books of children's books that they're taking out and checking out. But, you know, a full-time child librarian, I think, would be a huge asset to the community and the library, because that's your development base, you know. Another thing is, just as a person who uses the library a lot, I mean, obviously you have a real need for interlibrary loans. That's not being met. And maybe that costs something, but I think people are willing to pay a certain amount of money to get a great book that might be at the other side of the country or in another country. But it could expand the network. You know, I just thought, even like a venue like this, this room is fantastic. You have an outside door. Why give Starbucks the money? Why can't you, like, you look at the Martin Luther King Library, which I think is a fantastic library, and they'll have a little coffee set up. So when people want to meet, why the hell give it to Starbucks or a coffee cup? They're nice places, granted. But you have a coffee place here where adults can hang out, have some coffee. They can have some meetings and talk. You see it all the time. They could be real vibrant that way, and the library makes some money. Even just some little small things. I mean, here's the things I know, because I like libraries. That's my strength, I'd say. You go to a downtown library, you look at the used bookstores. Goodwill sells paperbacks for $1, hardbacks for $3. The prices of those books are not too good. The books aren't in great shape, and you just move them and get them out. The main thing is, shove them out, get people to read. And they're overpriced for what's there. You know, it's just, I mean, just a simple thing. But, you know, those are some of my concerns, because I can see that even, I'll tell you another thing, as somebody uses this library a lot, and you want to get a book. I was looking for a Double Down, a new book on politics. I can't request that. I have to wait till I know it's online. It gives the impression that if you want something, somebody else is making a decision for you, and that you're not getting any feedback for how many times you would actually like it. To put yourself also, as well, just to be greedy, want first crack at the book. You can miss it by one day, and then you're like 99 out of how many circulating copies. But it's like, that is a where you get, one, some feedback on a, I assume that you do it on a computer, and you say, who's requesting these books? How many requests have we had for these books? What books does the public want? But I mean, those are some of the concerns, because I would love to see stuff like that done. And I think, you know, I think just by being around and knowing the community, I can make a contribution that way, as well as just the fact that, I love librarians, and I'm always on the librarian's side. I mean, really biased that way if there's a bias, just because they put their time out with a lot of people. But that's all.
Thank you. And is it Reese or
Reese?
Reese. Thank you, Mr. Reese.
All right, thank you.
Any questions? No? All right, thank you. Keep weighing down that side of the table here.
We're watching.
It's a trick table. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, Catherine Ritchie withdrew her application, so those are all the applications, and we will come back at our January meeting and make a decision, and the selected applicant will be seated at that meeting. So we will be contacting you in terms of the process over the next month, so we can advise you on your attendance at the meeting and how we will proceed. So, but thank you for your applications, all of you.
I might say that I think we have some really obviously highly qualified people that are seeking this position. It's reassuring that so many people would like to have this position, and we just have tough shoes to follow with Nancy, but that's their problem.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the staff reports. And these are all information items. But, Teresa?
Monthly narrative report. Unless there's any questions, I don't have any chance to add to it. Statistical reports, same thing. Financial snapshots. September has been reviewed by the Finance Committee. October has not. They will do that at their December 16th meeting. But basically, our reserves had gone down below that 2 million level that we had set because of the paying off the loan for the city, but that's back up, so that's okay. Everything else is tracking pretty close. I mean, we're still kind of early in the year, and we've had some big expenditures early in the year. We started to do some of the capital maintenance items that were $250,000 was a lot of that. We haven't spent all of it yet, but we started to spend that. We had the first payment on the computer system, so some big ticket items went, so expenditures are a little bit high, but definitely within reason. Sales tax continues to be very strong. The discard process, this is, you had asked me to bring you what we do for discards, and basically what I've given you is the current out of the collection development plan we currently have, the criteria for discards, and then the basic process is when material is discarded, we try to locate another place if it's appropriate for the materials. The Friends, we do give the materials to the Friends to sell. We were giving them to the Friends to sell at Better World Books, which is a national kind of clearinghouse for selling books, and we got a very, 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 very small percentage back. So the Friends have just recently taken on selling our discards completely. So that's basically what we do for discards. So were there any questions about it that those that asked for this?
Well, we had a concern that what precipitated this is that there was a large quantities of books on tape, cassette tape. I know it's an old technology, but from what I heard, the Friends didn't want them. So it went from offered to the Friends to the dump. You know, boxes and boxes of plastic cassettes. It seems like there had to be a better way to offer these to those that want them. And I know that we tried. What I'm saying is, we don't try enough. Throwing thousands of books on tape into the landfill not only hurts me on a landfill basis, but on an information dying in the dirt. And it just, if that's happening with any number of books, it pains me. We need to find a better way. Is that too passionate?
Only if you can explain to me what a tape is.
So there's two things. Back before electricity, when we watched TV in the dark. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
At the Friends book sale in November, they
tipped them all home with this. We cannot sell them.
And I think they have some that they're going to sell at the December Scotts Valley.
We have advertised it. The Scotts Valley Friends are going to increase. include books on tape, on cassette, at their sale. Part of the problem that we have is people contribute them to us, and when you check them, it's a 7 cassette series, and there are 6 tapes in the box. And some of them are unwound, they don't play well, but truly we have tried to sell them. We just don't have customers.
Have we tried to give them away?
Yes, we have.
Yes. We've tried to give them away. I'm sure the library has, but the Friends also have. We've tried jails. We've tried the military, you know, we'll offer to see if we can ship them to Afghanistan or someplace.
Yes. Let's see if there's any other board member questions.
I wasn't disturbed about discarding them, mainly because of what you're saying. But I do appreciate that's a lot of plastic going into the trash. And I understand that books can be, you know, magazines can be, that's paper recycling. But what can you do? How can you responsibly trash all that plastic?
We tried Gray Bears.
No, I don't mean just give, but I mean... is there some recycling? I haven't ever heard of anything, but it...
Not that you could find.
It does seem like a lot of trash.
It's an unusual situation, too.
It is.
It's a format changeover, which, you know, a dead format, which doesn't happen too often.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it several times. So it's not usually as large scale as that.
What quantity of books do we throw away?
I don't have a figure.
Friends, no?
Well, I don't want to be attacked here, but
no.
When I started with the Friends, I started in the sorting room, and it hurt me physically to throw away a book, and I had to be trained to do that because our storage costs are huge, bigger really than our little organization can afford and give the amount of money we want to give to the library. So we've developed a policy where if a book is damaged or, you know, somebody is giving you the physician's reference guide from 1937 because, you know, people die, and what happens is whoever's cleaning out the house brings everything there to us, and we take it. But we do probably throw away about maybe a third of the books we are given, and we sell the rest. The better books go in the store and are sold at higher prices, and the store does very well. The mass of the books are sold twice a year in November and in the spring at the big sales.
Is there an opportunity, other than the physician's desk reference from 1937, to give any books away?
We do. The books that don't sell at the big book sale, Goodwill comes and takes them.
Okay.
So we don't. What we're throwing away are things that we simply know nobody wants, or that they're damaged, or that they're moldy,
right.
They've been in somebody's garage.
Right, and I think what you laid out here in the discard policy was a very rational approach to doing exactly that. You know, things that are out of date, damaged, duplicates, you know, that are beyond the circulation statistics, they're not circulating anymore. And I think you've got a really good rationale for the
No, I understand, especially I understand how our circulation grows with the popularity of books. They're not circulated anymore. They're not checked out. We have to call the collection. But it's a big step between culling the collection because something's not checked out and throwing it in a trash can.
Well,
so what I'm trying to do is focus on as few books as possible. The damaged ones, the moldy ones, you have my vote. 1937, PDR, I got it. I just want to just be a little more cautious with the books.
I really do think we try very hard to repurpose those materials that are worthy of repurposing.
Okay. Councilman Reed.
So are we, the audio tapes or cassette tapes are basically gone?
After December 7th.
Okay. So
Scotts Valley sale will be it.
Okay. So I would say the next time there's going to be like a media change where a whole class is going to get purged, if we could, you know, notify board members, notify the media. I do know there are some nonprofits on the other side of the hill that would like to get audio tapes, and they're actually still looking for them because they cater to senior citizens, and they say a lot of seniors still have audio tape technology. So maybe just in the future, if there's going to be a purge for a media changeover, just make a note that, you know, we give 30 or 60 days notice and we try and get the word out as much as possible that these are available to anybody who wants them. That would be my only thought. And then on the bullet criteria that you've got, to Mike's point, you know, if something's damaged or mold or it's got inaccurate information, that's an easy one. To what extent, when we say that something hasn't met an average circulation expectation, or if it's, it hasn't circulated for a given period of time, to what extent do we just look for opportunities to try and purge things from the collection that are just a burden because they're never checked out? That's something.
All the time. That's part of the responsibility of a professional librarian, is to make those decisions based on a different criteria. For example, you're going to hang on to a philosophy book that may be circulated only two times, but a popular a fiction item that only circulated two times in that same time period of 5 years, you might consider getting rid of. I mean, a history book is going to have a value for a much longer time than ephemeral kinds of materials. So that's why it's based on the subject area,
right?
Because we have different criteria for different subjects, and that's where we get reports that tell us how many times items have circulated. And you're doing. We subscribe to a very robust service called Collection HQ, which helps analyze our collection for us and has standard criteria that it uses to say, hey, these are the grubby items. You should need to take a look at these because they haven't circulated, and given their area, you probably need to take a look at them. So it's very time consuming, and a lot of thought goes into it. As much thought goes into what we get rid of as to what we buy.
And when books are purged because of insufficient use, that's when they go to the Friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
they go to the Friends unless they're in bad shape,
right,
or dangerously outdated, like a drug book from 1935.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other?
Just an observation that, you know, I'm delighted that I can order books like that. I'm reading a book right now that was a 1999 bestseller and still in the library. It's so conditioned, but it's still there. It's still very readable, and it was available. So they don't all go out just because they've been around for a while.
Right.
Board Member Dexter.
I also want to point out that it's my understanding that we're going to be starting in our library loan again.
Yeah.
And that will extend our collection enormously. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have something in our collection, if we have purged something because it didn't check out in 5 years, and if we need it, we can get it.
Yeah, exactly. We hope to bring interlibrary loan back by after the new system comes up, or July 1, whichever.
That's great. Yeah, I was interested in this topic. We discussed it when we had that technology overview about how a library forecasts what types of media they order. Like, we've seen a lot of popular titles that, you know, everybody wants to get a copy of, so we'll order up a huge supply of one title, and then after several months, you know, that demand dies off. So how we use more electronic media as a way to kind of deal with some of those more popular issues, so we kind of move up beyond and have a reasonable supply of books, you know, on title, so we're not discarding things, you know, on a regular basis. But this is about disposal, but how we kind of integrate that new technology into the collection and, you know, publicize it, so we don't end up, you know, discarding large quantities of media in the future.
It'll be interesting to see the impact that electronic books has on this whole topic, because you don't have to read them.
Yeah.
Not taking up room on your shelf.
Right. So, does any member? Well, you have one other item two other: facilities master plan and ILS. And then I'll open up if there's any public comment on these informational items.
Facilities master plan. We've met several times since the last meeting. We have another meeting this Thursday. Continuing to just work at the issues, mostly working on the governance and the JPA agreement. We're still optimistic that we'll have a report for the steering committee in January. And we have, I think, three meetings now planned between now and December 20th. Our goal is to really push through it before the holidays and
get real.
So we've got work ahead of us. But we gain a lot of information gathering. I've been working with Mike Termini and Michael Velberg, who's doing some additional costing or recosting, and he's starting to get some information to us. And So we're making progress.
Great. Any major hang-ups?
Are there any major hang-ups?
Yeah.
Not yet. Everything's on the table at this point, so there's no real hang-ups yet.
The ILS?
The ILS. Basically, we've sent the data to be analyzed. Lynn and her crew spent the day after Thanksgiving configuring hardware at Kuzaya, which is our colo location. I mean, that's repetitive. There's a lot of steps to this process, as I hope that diagram illustrated. I know Lynn has it under control, right, Lynn?
Yes.
So,
presumably.
We're still planning for April 9th. We do have both Lynn and another staff member possibly facing a rather long jury trial. Not there, not on trial, they may be on the jury.
Thank you for that.
Some people will do anything to get out of a computer installation, so I don't want to say anything about our justice system, but I sure hope they don't get picked, because that's really going to be a nightmare for us. But other than that, that's our hang-up, Zach, on that end, is the honest. If you lose Lynn for 3 months, that won't be
great. Our development server goes live.
It's the spirits.
On when?
The 16th of December.
December 16th, internal server to try out the new system.
Great.
We'll start doing some things there.
Are there any other board member questions regarding these items?
Yeah, I have one. By the way, the flow chart didn't scan very well.
No, it didn't.
So somewhere in there, I'm sure, in the flowchart that I can't really see, there must be something that addresses the public outreach part of this.
Yes.
And I realize that April 16th is a ways away, and the focus right now is getting the initial data migration and all of that going. But in the end, that's going to be...
Yes.
You know, I don't want to talk about, like, websites that didn't work very well.
That's why the development server going up December 16th.
Right. But the marketing for this ahead of time is really going to be critical.
Janice is hiding back there, but Janice has that under control, right? Janice, do you want to say about marketing for the new system? Do you know it's on your agenda?
Oh, yes, it's definitely on my agenda. Well, I'm taking Liz's lead. As soon as they tell me to start talking,
We're still finalizing things like, do we need to stop taking polls at a certain point or not? At a certain point, are we going to make an extra long checkout period so nothing comes due when we come up or for a week afterwards? So we're still internally batting those things around as we learn more from Polaris.
The reason I raise it is that it wasn't that long ago that we went to Evergreen. And people were discombobulated over that. And now here we are doing it again, all for a good reason. Mm-hmm. But they aren't going to see it in quite the same way.
Right.
And as much as we can publicize that this is really great.
No, I agree. Yeah.
I know you know that.
Yeah. If I could just say, there's a bunch of things Lynn is trying to do in advance of the software actually coming, and I kind of included that in the report, which is giving people fully functioning PCs that have USB drives at work, and dropping printers so people can pay to print, scan, copy, and fax. And we're hoping that will help buffet some of the changes that come in April when we do switch over, and that it'll make the public more happy to see a new system come on board, because greater changes are also coming.
Yeah, that's going to be important.
They're going to see more functions before we even come up with new systems.
Are there any other questions regarding these informational items? Board Member English?
On the IT system, I heard the word development server. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a sandbox, whatever you call it, new world, to test this new system in parallel with Evergreen before you go online.
Yeah, and this will be internal use only, so the public will not have access to it.
Yeah.
But we will be testing it as if it were a live server and putting it through its paces. And that is a 2-month process, so that we can work all the bugs out before we do the final data extraction from Evergreen into the new system.
That's a big difference from the Evergreen system.
It's a huge difference from the Evergreen.
Very positive.
Thanks. See no other questions? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak to these issues that are listed in the informational items, A through F? Okay, seeing none, bring it back. There's no action required, so we can move on to written communications. And typically, unless there's any board member questions, these are just included in the packet, just for your reference. I did have one question, and that had to do with an event from the SCPL incident log. And if you go to, it took place in Capitola, and there was an event that wasn't reported. And I just wanted to know, what is our practice when you have some type of behavior that would warrant just having it reported to the PD? It just says no steps were taken. And I just was curious. I mean, obviously, someone resolved it internally at the branch, but it's the event dated October 11, 2013.
Seems serious enough to report it.
That's what I would think.
Well, it was reported several days after the incident, so that would be my assumption why they didn't call the police. And if the person had come up to them at the time and said something, they would have called the police. Mm-hmm. But my guess is,
I guess if something like that happened, just to have a record of it.
Well,
I think
we do.
Important.
Our incident reports are that we keep on. So this, what you're seeing is a summary of it, but
yeah.
These are backed up by very detailed incident reports that are held by the city's risk management division for us, and we have gone back to those, and we do go back to those and use those. Should we get another same person get a complaint about it, then we can go back to it and use that.
Well, I guess it just goes beyond like the behavior in the library. Something like that is taking place that could indicate something else going on, and that you'd want maybe someone in law enforcement to know about it.
The name of the person was known.
Hmm? Yeah, they may not have. They
well, I don't know if they did.
Yeah, the patron.
Oh,
yeah.
That's the patron's name.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
Oh, that's the patron's name.
If they didn't know it, I mean,
no.
That's one thing.
Yeah. No, that's the person.
That's the offender.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's
complaint?
Exactly right. Okay,
yeah,
so that was just a comment, just as a practice moving forward.
You know, I'm not. Well, I have to double check. I have to look at the report and make sure that they didn't call the police afterwards. They probably should have, but they probably didn't because it was several days later. But we do encourage staff to call rather than not call a lot. We can see by the.
Yeah, I know. It just seemed like this list is, you know, much longer than we've seen in the
yeah,
past.
I think it's 2 months worth too.
Yeah. Okay.
It's 2 months.
Yeah.
Worth.
And the other was the 10/20 event with the cello guy. I mean, I just think sometimes I know I've seen that before in the reports.
Yeah.
And there was security action, but sometimes I don't know at what point, you know, things escalate when there's someone that's causing, you know, ongoing disturbances in the branch. But
well, in this case, Dane Jensen is first alarm,
yeah.
So. Once we get the security guards involved, they make the decision whether to call the police or not on that particular incident. We write up our own report, but in terms of calling the police, we do leave it to them. I just signed a 14-day restriction on someone because of repeated incidents. So if this individual is abusive again, then we would start.
Okay.
We give him a day, a week, 2 weeks, and we do banning.
And then just the last comment was that it seemed like a lot of these disturbances take place around the computer and internet use. And
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there's a way to look at what our policy is so that, you know, one, you have maybe some sort of timer or something. It removes it from the person going after the person using the computer, and it becomes there's some orderly process when someone is, you know, speaking. They shouldn't be going up to another patron and, you know, having an interaction regarding whether or not they should be on the computer or not. You know, maybe there's, so if there's a way to kind of, you know.
We are. We're looking at timing systems.
Okay.
That's one of the things we're demoing in this two-month window with the dev server is we're demoing new PC timing reservation software.
Okay.
Right now our solution is homegrown because we had to put it on Linux dumb terminals. So because we're moving to a Windows environment, it opens up a lot more possibilities for us to do more of an out-of-box solution that will work all the time, every time.
Okay,
so
thank you. Those are just
those are examples of improvements we're trying to put in as along with the new systems.
Are there any other items?
Just a quick follow-up to that. You the policies that we have in place for expulsion or suspension, you continue to think they're the right ones, and they give you and staff the appropriate amount of flexibility. There's not anything else you want us to do or additional?
No, they're working extremely well. I got a report of something that I would have considered assault. And said, why didn't you throw them out for a year? You know, because that's, you know, an automatic. And right. Staff explained that, actually the security guard explained that the witness to it was unreliable as the person that did it. So we gave them a shorter expulsion. But the policy is there and is there as a it's working extremely well. Would staff agree? Catherine, Jason, anyone else?
Yeah.
Staff's really making use of it. I mean,
any other questions regarding these items?
Oh, actually, I want to add, we're starting patrols at Charlton, aren't we? We started patrols at Charlton.
I don't know.
Have they started yet?
Yes.
Are we piggybacking with the other patrols in the area? Yeah, First Alarm does
First
other
Alarm.
Patrols. First Alarm does other patrols in Felton at other businesses, so we're piggybacking on them and having them also do the library. We've had a number of incidents, particularly after hours. Felton's on the problem during open hours, but after hours, it's noisy and something.
Okay.
Not pretty.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I'm working with the Lardy Board on re-landscaping that area because there's a lot of things that could be done, and I know we've been talking to Jason too, so hopefully.
Yeah. But that's, you know, we see repeated things like that.
Environmental security.
Yeah.
Environmental
security. Mm-hmm. Lights. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first thought was our own First Alarm Guard, but that's extremely expensive, so it really must be.
Mm-hmm.
They must be in the area anyway, and they are, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. So, next item on the agenda is a board meeting calendar.
You approved it in the consent. The next meeting is January 13th. Notice it's the second Monday of the month.
Okay, well, yeah, that's after the board meeting. Is there anything else on the board meeting calendar, number 12?
No, you've got the calendar for next year as part of consent. Just notice the February date is not the
second Monday.
It's the second Monday.
Yeah. So the next item is the next meeting, which is Monday, January 13th at 6:30 p.m. at the Downtown Branch Library. That is subject to change. We may have a closed session item, and we'll provide notice if that takes place. And there's no other business. Meeting's adjourned.